What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. Larry Rifkin along with John Krofcik. And John, we do try to get into so many different issues on America Trends. I know that people who rate our podcast on various sites love some of the diversity of the topics. And we get into things that are highly political, other things that are more about social trends. But we also look at human beings and human behavior and the way we treat each other. And I think that's great because we're part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. And so we care about the impact that society has on the individual and the way the individual responds within society to all of those stimuli that come in. And, you know, we have tried to stop blaming people and shaming people in many ways because our society can be very, very judgmental. But one area where I don't think we've done a terribly good job is in the issue of folks who are overweight. They still, according to a lot of research, are being prejudiced by virtue of the fact that you see them and you say, oh, that person is overweight, and maybe you ascribe various attributes to them because of their weight.
Well, I think that's always been a problem. Now, I think social media really is destroying our country with not only this, but bullying and everything else that goes along with that. And, you know, I don't know how we can put the genie back in the bottle, but I really think that social media is one that I don't know how we're going to control or whatever, but has added to this problem of bullying, you know, people who are larger, you know, people who don't look right. You know, it's really sad.
Well, I even heard someone the other day on a broadcast talking about being someone who's short in our society, or I don't know what the formal term is, and how difficult it is for him because there are just so many assumptions made. Are you a grown adult? Should I treat you that way? So because of physical type, people are really categorized, and that is unfortunate. And what's even more unfortunate, perhaps, is the fact that many of us who care about people who may be overweight don't know how to even address the issue and help them. Parents often are the worst offenders when they're talking to a child and they're scolding them about one thing or another about their, you know, overweight condition.
Well, you're
and
right.
They're not really helping them.
That's an awkward situation, and how do you handle it? That's absolutely true, too.
And the self-image in our society and physical appearance. And I know today, I mean, we do have a president who, you know, loves to say, well, I wouldn't have done anything with that woman. Do you think I would look at her? I mean, that's ridiculous, you know, that we ascribe so much to physical appearance. I mean,
right. That's
just shameful. And that's what we're really talking about on this particular podcast, is the notion of fat shaming.
Well, we also got the media, which is sending both boys and girls so many mixed messages. I mean, you look in the movies, you look on TV. I mean, this is what you got to look like. This is how you got to be, you know. And it's been a problem with me when I brought up my kids, even, because it's horrible, the messages that are sent out there.
One of the good things, though, I do think, and I want to make certain that I balance this conversation, is the fact that I do see some of these plus size models now. I do see people like, I think it's Rebel Wilson, and she's doing ads for Match.com.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a larger woman. I think that is really healthy, that we show the entire, shall I say, spread of our society. I mean, it's true. And we have a lot of people, let's be honest, we do have an issue with big food in our society, that they are really pumping us up with calories. I mean, they really are.
That's
and
true.
We've seen where when we rebuilt a beautiful grand old movie theater here in our city, where we come from, they had to make the seats actually larger to accommodate the new size of people. So there's no question. So why should we as a society be judgmental when our society in general is a little more robust than we've been in the past?
No, you know, I think also the health concerns that come with that, though, too, is it's we got to deal with that as a whole. That's why, you know, medicine is so expensive, too.
Well, I do love, I know you're going to say that I'm starting to take out crystals here and put them on the console of the radio studio. But Marianne Williamson, when she says we don't have a healthcare system, we have a sick care system.
We do. That's
and we'll give you a magic bullet and we'll make you all better.
Right.
But continue your lifestyle.
So we got big pharma and big food.
Exactly.
Feeding
You're
us.
Right. Exactly. Well, let's talk about this issue. It really is interesting. Rebecca Poole is a PhD. She's also, John, the deputy director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at my alma mater, the University of Connecticut. A wonderful woman, very, very knowledgeable in this area. And she joins us today on America Trends.
With us on the line on America Trends is Rebecca Poole, PhD. She's the deputy director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity, and also a professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Sciences at the University of Connecticut. And we're here today to talk about weight stigma, what some people call fat shaming. And tell me, how prevalent is it, Dr. Poole, in our society?
Well, you know, we've had now decades of research documenting weight stigma and discrimination, and we see that this is a very prevalent problem. For adults in the U.S., as many as 40% report that they have experienced unfair treatment or stigma or discrimination because of their weight. In children and adolescents, these kinds of experiences typically translate to bullying and harassment. And we see that weight-based bullying is one of the most prevalent forms of bullying towards children. So for both youth and adults, this is certainly a very common problem.
And is there anything that we as a society have not really done to this point to really deal with this or to take this issue seriously enough?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that we're doing in our society that really promote and worsen weight stigma. If we look at our mass media, for example, we see many stereotypical portrayals of both children and adults in television, in film, and social media. And those kinds of portrayals really reinforce broader societal attitudes and stereotypes, beliefs that people with obesity are lazy or unmotivated or lacking in discipline. But beyond the media, we also see very overt forms of discrimination in multiple societal settings. So we see weight discrimination in the workplace, where people who have a higher body weight are essentially facing unfair treatment at every stage of the employment cycle, from being hired to being fired. We see evidence of weight stigma in healthcare, where patients who have larger body sizes are facing stigma from healthcare providers. They're facing lack of access to medical procedures and appropriate medical equipment. And even in educational institutions, we see inequities faced by students who have obesity, who have poorer educational outcomes compared to their peers. And so, you know, what are we doing to address this? Well, one of the reasons that we may see these kinds of unfair treatment experiences continuing is because we don't have any legislation that prohibits weight discrimination. So currently, in most of the U.S., it is perfectly legal to treat people unfairly because of their weight. Michigan is the only state that has legislation. They passed their law about 40 years ago now, which includes body weight as one of their protected characteristics in their civil rights law. But if you don't live in Michigan, there's only half a dozen other cities in the country that have passed local ordinances that prohibit weight discrimination. And what that means is that for the vast majority of people who confront inequities because of their weight, there is no legal recourse. And that really serves to maintain a lot of the discrimination that we continue to see.
You do a lot of research in this area. It seems to me that in the course of your research, you're finding that perhaps even the healthcare industry as well as the people who love our children the most, for example, their parents, don't really know how to handle this issue often and can exacerbate the problem.
Yeah, I think that's one of the surprising things that we've observed in our studies, that parents, healthcare providers, people that we really look to for care and trust may actually be, in some cases, contributing to this problem. So, for example, we know from our studies with children and adolescents that many of them report being teased and even bullied by family members and parents about their weight. And when it comes to parents, I think this is a really complicated issue because oftentimes parents are very concerned about their child's weight. They want them to be healthy. They may want them to lose weight. But their concerns can be communicated in ways that are very critical and judgmental, and then sometimes can be translated in forms of bullying and teasing. And so, there's certainly a lot of education that we need to do with parents when it comes to the impact of how they talk about weight and how their children respond to that. So really helping parents understand that weight-based teasing is harmful. We've done a lot of research on how weight-related stigma and bullying and discrimination affect health, and instead really help parents be more supportive to their children in their efforts to be healthier.
Dr. Poole, as we've been discussing, there are a lot of parents and healthcare professionals who really don't handle this issue terribly well. Tell us about healthcare providers, what more they can do.
Well, what's interesting is that when we look at the training that healthcare providers receive across disciplines, whether we're talking about medicine or nursing or dietetics, there's not really any attention to this issue of weight stigma. And in fact, most physicians don't get very much training at all on obesity or nutrition. And so what happens is, I think, frustration, but also just not knowing what resources to provide to patients who want to lose weight, and again, communication that can really be received as stigmatizing and judgmental. And so I think there's a real opportunity for education and training of healthcare professionals. And in fact, at the Red Center, we receive a lot of requests from healthcare professionals who really want resources and education on this topic so that they can really better understand how to talk to patients about weight-related health in ways that are supportive and empowering rather than stigmatizing. And a lot of this even has to do with the words that we use when we talk about weight. We've done a number of studies with adults, with adolescents, on what kinds of language people prefer that we use when we talk about body weight. And what we see is that generally people really prefer more neutral words when we talk about higher body weight, like higher BMI, rather than words like fat or obese. And using those words like fat or obese can actually make people feel stigmatized, can make them feel less motivated to engage in health behaviors, and in some cases can make people feel like they don't want to return to future medical appointments. So paying attention to things like communication and language is really important for healthcare professionals.
Some of this seems a little bit ironic in a society where, in fact, I know when they're building new theaters and new stadiums, we have to make the seats larger. I mean, the American society and the processed food industry and the like certainly, capitalize on, people not necessarily paying a whole lot of attention to their weight.
Yeah, I think there are so many mixed messages that people receive in our society. On the one hand, we see the food industry, beverage industry, really targeting people with unhealthy, calorie-dense, fatty, high-sugar foods that contribute to obesity. On the other hand, we have the diet industry and the fashion industry telling people that they need to look thin in order to be successful and accepted and desirable in our society. I think it's very difficult for people to navigate through these messages, especially children and adolescents for whom body image is really important and where they're receiving these messages and being told that they can eat as much as they want and they should eat these good-tasting foods, but at the same time, they have to look like thin supermodels.
Yet, I do see a certain trend that we have plus-size models and actresses and anchors and some that are encouraging that type of exposure so that people don't think everyone looks like Twiggy. That's a dated reference, I know. But is that going on as well? Is there a little bit more acceptance? Because I seem to see people that I wouldn't have imagined in the past I would see in certain public settings.
Yeah, you know, I would say my response to that is both yes and no. So yes, we are seeing more diverse body sizes and representation of people with diverse body sizes in television and in film. And I think that's very important because it is sending messages about self-acceptance and body acceptance and body positivity. So the increasing exposure there, I think, is very important. At the same time, though, when we look at research evidence on societal attitudes, we really aren't seeing changes in the way that you would expect. So there was actually a very large study done earlier this year by researchers out of Harvard University who looked at biased attitudes towards different groups related to race and sexual orientation and weight and others. And this was among over 2 million people, or maybe even 4 million people over 20 years. And essentially what they found is that other forms of bias related to sexual orientation and race have really declined substantially over recent decades and recent years. But weight bias, especially implicit weight bias, which refers to kind of our more unconscious attitudes, has worsened and is not getting better. And so, you know, I think that we need more of the kinds of exposures to diverse body sizes that we're starting to see in the media that can really help challenge existing societal stereotypes that are very prevalent and abundant in our society.
So is it fair to say, as some have said, that it's one of the last forms of discrimination that still is acceptable? I know a lot of comedians still use it in their material. Mm-hmm. So is it fair to say that?
You know, I think certainly from a policy standpoint, that statement does hold true in many ways. Because when we look at the prevalence rates of weight discrimination and we look at how pervasive this is in our society, it's one of the only forms of discrimination that remains legal. And I think that speaks to the broader kind of societal tolerance that we have, that somehow this form of bias and stigma is okay.
How do we prove that somebody is being discriminated against because of their weight?
You know, that's a great question, and in some cases it's difficult to prove, but there are many different ways that researchers have studied this. Some researchers have conducted experimental studies where they have hiring managers evaluate job applications that are identical. However, in some cases, the job applicant is portrayed as having obesity, and in some cases, they're portrayed as being thinner. And what these kinds of studies show is that when hiring managers see these applications with the heavier applicants, they judge them more harshly, they assign them lower starting salaries, they're less likely to hire them, even though their qualifications are identical. So there's those kinds of studies that show us that this is happening. We also see evidence of obesity wage penalties that have been observed across many different studies in the U.S. and outside of the U.S., in fact, showing that people with higher body weight and higher BMI earn less than thinner counterparts, even after you account for all sorts of other reasons why we might see those numbers, whether it's education or health or family status, socioeconomic status, all sorts of different factors which really point to that weight discrimination. And then, of course, we have reports that people are experiencing these kinds of instances, and there have been lawsuits filed where we can see the kinds of discriminatory behaviors that are occurring. And in some of these cases, employers have been fairly frank that, you know, they are not hiring employees of a certain body weight, which feels very discriminatory and sounds very discriminatory, but when we don't have laws that prohibit it, it goes unsanctioned.
When you think about it, race, sex, religion, those are relative constants, so somebody can change their religion. But with weight, it's a variable, and somebody can go up, somebody can go down. I mean, people do evolve, and some may get, you know, larger over time, some thinner. Is there anything that we can look at on that continuum that suggests that we can see changes in the way people are treated based upon their size?
Well, I think it's a very popular belief that body weight is changeable, easily changeable, and that people can have whatever body weight they want if they just try hard enough. But, you know, what that kind of assumption ignores is the very strong role of biological and genetic factors that contribute to body weight. And there is a mounting and substantial science to say that we really can't change our biology. And, you know, I think what we know from the science is that people gain weight very easily, but it's very difficult to achieve significant sustainable weight loss over time. So most people can lose some amount of weight on a diet plan, but keeping it off is very hard, and that has much more to do with biology than it does with motivation or willpower or anything like that. And in fact, because obesity is really viewed to be this chronic condition, the American Medical Association has actually defined it as a disease. You know, we see evidence from a lot of treatment studies showing that, you know, the most that we can really expect people to lose and keep off over time is about 10% of their body weight. And for many people, it's less than that. So I think part of the shift here needs to really challenge this assumption that, you know, oh, well, people can just change their weight. They can do whatever they want. They can, you know, no longer have extra weight just by going on a diet. It's really not that simple. And I think we need to look at this as more of a chronic issue. I'd also say to that, though, that even if, you know, some new magic pill or solution was developed to help people keep weight off over time, does that mean that we need to think about laws or policy or discrimination differently? I mean, there are many laws that protect people from discrimination, even if the reason that they are being discriminated against is perceived to be under personal control. So, for example, if we think about disability legislation, if someone is driving a vehicle under the influence of alcohol and gets into a crash, for example, and becomes paralyzed, they will be covered under the American with Disabilities Act, even though they may have been responsible for that crash. So that whole kind of argument of personal responsibility, I think, doesn't really have relevance here when we talk about the need for equal treatment and dignity and respect of people regardless of their body size.
Oh, absolutely. And I wasn't trying to say that it was easily changeable, but it's one of those, you know, interesting aspects to all of this, because as we know, we see a lot in our society where Weight Watchers and Nutrisystems, and I've seen some billboards lately, you know, look at me here, and then down the road a quarter mile, look at the new me, and everybody's making it look as if that is something that is achievable by use of some product or perhaps surgery or whatever. Is there a more effective way to manage weight as best we can tell? Because I know we've done a podcast on smoking cessation and looking at vaping versus other, you know, approaches. Is there a more effective way?
Well, I think we really need to create an environment that makes it easy for people to be healthy. And instead, we're really doing the opposite. You know, we really couldn't have done a better job creating a society that promotes unhealthy behaviors and obesity. Mm-hmm. And so that means really changing our environment, making healthier foods cheaper, more accessible, offering more opportunities for physical activity rather than sedentary electronics and devices that keep people from moving. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do to make healthier behaviors the default rather than the exception, and we just haven't been doing that.
Absolutely. Rebecca Poole is with us, PhD, Deputy Director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at the University of Connecticut. Here's another one that we hear, and I know this is going to be debunked in just a moment by you, and it's so ridiculous, but some people do believe that by making somebody who's overweight feel ashamed of their weight or eating habits may motivate them to get healthier. Now, I know that's not true.
You're absolutely right. It's not true. And you know, there's this idea that somehow stigma will provide incentive or motivation to people. And what we see from research evidence is the opposite is true, that when people are stigmatized because of their weight, this actually contributes to a range of negative consequences for health. This includes their psychological or emotional health. We know that stigma fuels things like depression and anxiety, low self-esteem, substance use, even suicidality. But from physical health, we also know that when people are stigmatized about their weight, that This can contribute to elevated physiological stress and biological stress, as well as binge eating and unhealthy eating behaviors, weight gain, obesity, metabolic diseases. And so I think it's really helpful to understand that stigma impairs health. It does not facilitate health.
What's going on social media involving weight stigma? I understand, and I think you've alluded to it, that harassment, cyberbullying, and I was reading that is especially true among women.
You know, I think what we've seen with the emergence of social media is, again, both some good and some bad when it comes to weight stigma. On the one hand, we are seeing unfortunate attacks of people because of their body weight, and women are often recipients of this. And there have been some interesting studies looking at kind of the comments that people make on social media, attacking people because of their weight, as well as in venues like YouTube and Twitter. So unfortunately, we're seeing more of that appear. At the same time, social media has also become a platform for people to call out that negative stigma. And we're seeing more of that too. So we're seeing people stand up to this. We're seeing people call it out and really say that there is shame in fat shaming others. So it will be interesting to see, you know, how this back and forth continues.
I know you've done some recent work, some studies regarding weight stigma with LGBTQ youth. Would you like to tell us what the results are there?
Sure. Well, you know, we wanted to do some research to understand the experiences of LGBT youth when it comes to weight-based teasing, because surprisingly, there really hasn't been any research looking at this before. And what we found is that weight-based teasing is very common in these kids, and they are reporting being teased about their weight not only from their peers, but also from family members. The other thing that's been interesting to see is that across different sexual and gender identities, we're seeing that these kids are reporting being teased about their weight regardless of what their weight is. So we see high levels of weight-based teasing for those who have obesity, but we see high levels of weight-based teasing for those who are underweight as well. And I think that really tells us that for people who are working with these youth as educators or healthcare providers, that we really need to recognize that this is a vulnerable population when it comes to weight-based victimization. Typically, you know, the focus is on the victimization that they experience because of their sexual or gender identity, which of course is very important. But they may also be experiencing victimization because of their body weight. And what we're seeing is that this has negative consequences for their health as well. They're more likely to turn to substance use if they're being teased about their weight. They're more likely to turn to unhealthy eating behaviors. And so this is really a group that is at risk and that we need to pay more attention to.
You said it earlier, but I think it's worth repeating that word preferences and the way that we approach this subject, whether we're a parent or a caregiver or just a friend, is very, very important. I was surprised in one of your studies, unexpectedly, chubby was among the words assigned higher preference ratings in the sample. What are some of the terms that are best used or applied if you're going to address this topic and try not to make it pejorative from the outset?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things to point out is that there is a lot of variation in preferences. So the finding you just mentioned, we only found that in one of our studies, and it was only among girls who said that they'd prefer to be use words like chubby than obese or fat. But you know what? We see that these preferences really vary according to things like gender and BMI and all sorts of factors. And so we really recommend that we don't make assumptions necessarily on what is the best language to use, but rather to ask the person you're talking to what words they would feel most comfortable using. And this is essentially what we recommend to health providers. We suggest that, you know, you should probably consider your default to be using neutral language like body weight or unhealthy weight or BMI, but that it's best to ask patients what words they would feel most comfortable with while having conversations about weight-related health, because it does vary so much. And I think we're not at the place yet where we have kind of a universally accepted word or term or phrase that everyone feels comfortable with. So in the interim, it's really important to respect that individual diversity.
In closing, body image overall, I know that there are so many ways that we measure people in our society by their intellect or whatever it is that we're trying to gather information about. How important in the realm of all that we consider about ourselves and our own esteem is body image as you see it?
Well, you know, when it comes to our character and the way that we place value on ourselves, you know, the number on the scale or how much we weigh says absolutely nothing about people's character or abilities or talents or intelligence or accomplishments. And yet we see messages throughout our society that promote this idea that thinness and being thin should be a way that we value ourselves. And I think we really need to challenge those messages. We do live in a society where people have a lot of body image concerns, where they have poor body image and where they really kind of look at their physical appearance as being important to how they value themselves. And I think we really need to move away from that. There are so many more things that are more important than physical appearance. And it's something that our society, unfortunately, really remains obsessed with.
Rebecca Poole, thank you so much for being with us today. There is so much incredibly good information about this topic and so many others related to food policy and obesity at your website, UConn Rudd Center, and that's R-U-D-D, ruddcenter.org. Just remind people what they can find there.
We have lots of resources, whether you are a parent, an educator, a policymaker, or someone who's just interested in this topic. We have educational materials, we have handouts and videos and reports and research studies, and this is all free and available for download if you visit our website.
Thanks so much for being with us today on America Trends.
Thanks so much for having me.
America Trends podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.